talk about distances of between sections of bodies.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the distances between minimal distances between sections of two different convex bodies, and of course I will have to start with defining the distance, which was done quite a few times here, but let me recall what it is. We'll consider two convex symmetric bodies in Rn, and the distance between them is the Banach-Mazur distance. We take any linear image of the body D and squeeze it between K and the homotetic image lambda times K, and we choose this embedding T so that the lambda is minimal, and this lambda is called the distance. This is not really a metric. The logarithm of D is a metric, but for historical reasons we'll say that the distance between the body the distance between the body and itself is 1, the distance between two bodies is greater or equal than 1, and the distance satisfies the multiplicative triangle inequality instead of usual triangle inequality for a metric. And now we'll denote the unit ball of the n-dimensional LP space by BPN, and then we can ask how large the distance between two convex symmetric bodies can be. The answer is provided by two theorems. The first one is a classical theorem of Fritz-John, that if D is a convex symmetric body such that the maximal volume ellipsoid inscribed in D is the standard Euclidean ball, then, of course, we have the inclusion that the ball is inscribed in D. But moreover, D itself is contained in a copy of the ball times the coefficient square root of n. So that means that the distance between the convex symmetric body and the ball is bounded by the square root of n. And this is exact. It can be witnessed on many examples. The cube or the cross polytope have the distance square root of n, but actually there are infinitely many convex symmetric bodies whose distance is square root of n. Now let's use the triangle inequality, and if the distance between two bodies is square root of n, then by multiplying we get n. And the question, how exact is it, was open for a long time until Gluskin proved that it's exact up to a construct a special family of bodies, random convex bodies, dared to call Gluskin's polytopes. Actually, the official name is the unit balls of the Gluskin spaces, but it's too long to use it many times in talk. The problem with estimating distance from below is that up to now there is no deterministic example of a pair of convex bodies whose distance is essentially greater than square root of n. So instead, Gluskin introduced a random construct, let omega 1, etc., omega 3, and 3 is not essential coefficient here. You can choose any number which is essentially greater than n, be independently chosen a uniformly distributed random vectors on the unit sphere, and we define a random convex body B of omega. It's a convex hull of plus minus these random points, omega 1, omega 2. And for technical reasons, we include also the unit basis plus minus E1, En. And then, if we take two copies of these bodies, we take two independent collections of random vectors omega 1, omega m, then with probability close to 1, exponentially close to 1, the distance between two such bodies will be of order n. Now the question, I wanted to look at initially was whether the extremal example, which is extremal in every dimension, whether so if we consider any sections of two extremal bodies, would the distance be extremal? And the naive approach would be to take two Gluskin polytopes and ask for their sections whether the sections of two Gluskin polytopes are far away from each other at any dimension.
But at some point, the section you want random sections or big sections?
Okay, I want...
The section will be Euclidean.
Right. So the reason why this fails, why we cannot pass to the lower dimension for Gluskin polytopes is the volume ratio, which was introduced by Sharik and Tomczak Jägermann. And the volume ratio is the infimum of the volumes... I'm sorry, this should be an ellipsoid E, of the volumes of, ratio of the volumes of K and inscribed ellipsoids E, taken to the power 1 over N. So obviously this volume ratio is bounded from below by 1, and Keith Ball proved that the maximal volume ratio is attained for the cube, and it's of order square root of n. It turns out that Gluskin polytopes have a very an absolute constant, and then it was proved by Kashin, Sharik, and later and Sharik and Tomczak Jägermann that if K has a bounded volume ratio, then there exists a subspace E over N of dimension N over 2. I assume that N over 2 is an integer number, otherwise I'll take integer part, whose distance to the Euclidean, to the ellipsoid, is bounded by the constant times A squared. So if the volume ratio is bounded, then already on this dimension N over 2, two bodies are close to the sphere from which it follows that they are close to each other. So, what happens in general? Let K and D be two convex symmetric bodies, and let's pick a number K which is less than N, and define another distance dK as the smallest distance between the section of K and the section of D of dimension K.
When you write D, K intersecting, you mean distance to Euclidean?
Here it's the distance to Euclidean. Okay. Now what I'm interested in is the maximal possible distance dK for a fixed K and N, and I'll denote it delta of K and N. So I take the supra over all convex bodies. What is known about this distance? First, by the same Gluskin's theorem, if I take K equals to N, there are no subspaces, so the distance is of the order of N. Now, if K is very small, we have Dvoretsky theorem, and the dimension of order logarithm of N, and body has a spherical section, so the distance, this delta for logarithm of n, is bounded by an absolute constant. Let's see how large can it be. Are there any examples which allow to estimate it from below? And one example is the cube, and for the cube, the estimate between the distance of the section of the cube and the section of a ball is obtained independently by several authors, by Gluskin and the famous paper of Bergen, Lindenstrauss and Milman, and also by Carl and Pajor, and it is essentially the square root of the dimension. If we ignore the logarithmic factor, it's greater or equal than the square root of the dimension. And this estimate is known to be exact at any dimension, which was proved by Milman and Schechtmann. So if I use, if I ignore the logarithmic factor and I use the notation, this fancy less sign means that u is less than v times some power of logarithm of n, and u is equivalent to v if it is bounded by v times some power of logarithm from above and from below. We know that this maximal distance dk between convex bodies is bounded below by the square root of k, and since the sections are k-dimensional bodies, it's bounded above by k. So the main question, as in the lecture of Gil Kalai, is what's going on? The naive approach with Gluskin polytopes failed, but we can modify it a little bit, and it will already give a meaningful estimate. And let's take the polars of Gluskin polytopes. So the polars of Gluskin polytopes have large volume ratio. We do not have to worry about the Euclidean sections. And it works well for proportional dimensions. If k is proportional to n, it's of order n as well. But if k becomes low, estimate deteriorates, and on the level k equals square root of n, we get a constant which we know is not the optimal. We know that it should be at least square root of n. So we may try to modify this example to play with in polytopes, but there is a serious reason why this estimate deteriorates towards square root of n, and this is again the volume ratio. But this time the volume ratio of the polar of Gluskin polytopes is extremely large. It's of the order of maximal volume ratio, the volume ratio of a cube. And there is a theorem which was improved later by Roman Vershinin, that if the volume ratio is of the order of the volume ratio of the cube, then there is a subspace which is a section which is isomorphic to the cube, and the dimension of this section is of order square root of n. This square root prevents us to going lower with these examples. So, a somewhat similar problem was considered by Bergen and Milman, and they considered the distance between the section of a convex and the projection of another convex body, and they proved that for any two concentric bodies, there exists a section of the first body and the projection of the second body already in the proportional dimension, such that the distance between the section and the projection is bounded by essentially by the square root of n. And n over 2 has no special meaning here. You can take any proportion of n. So, the difference between our situation is that we have not the section and the projection, but two sections. So the main here is that this distance is bounded above by the square root of of the dimension k if k is less than n to the power 2/3, and by k squared over n if k is greater than n to the 2/3. And it turns out that this estimate is exact in all dimensions up to a logarithmic factor, which can be seen for square root on the example of the cube and the ball, and k squared over n is a pair of polars of Gluskin polytopes. Amazing. The problem here is not in finding the lower estimate, as it was with the diameter of Minkowski compactum. After we have the technique of Gluskin, we can just follow his proof line by line, but with finding the upper estimate. So,
individual bodies will have some such phase transition for individual bodies.
Okay, I'll talk about it later. Okay, now how to prove this theorem. And for convenience, instead of sections, we'll reformulate everything in projections. Instead of finding the distance between two sections of dimension k, we'll find the maximal distance between. We have to approximate a projection of convex body from two sides, from inside, from the inside, and from the other outside. And these are two independent procedures. The approximation from the inside is quite simple, and we will combine the properties of two ellipsoids. The first one is an L ellipsoid, and to introduce the L ellipsoid, I'll have to define the quantities which appeared here already several times. L of k is the expectation of the norm of the standard Gaussian vector with respect to k, or its square root of n times m of k in that annotation, and L of k polar, it may be written as the expectation of the supremum of the scalar product of the Gaussian vector against the points of k, which, by the way, shows that this definition is invariant under the shifts. And also, the L of k polar has a very clear geometric meaning. It's a square root of n times the mean width of k. Now we combine several results in the asymptotic theory of convex bodies, namely the theorem of Figeler and Tomczyk-Jagerman, which relates the product of L of k times L of k polar to the k-convexity, the k-convexity estimate of Pizier, and the theorem of Pajor and Tomczyk-Jagerman, and we obtain the following good property of the L ellipsoid. But if k is a convex symmetric body, we can find such a position of k that a projection of rank n over 2 will have a ball inside of it, and also we can simultaneously control the L of Vk and L of Vk polar. The product of them should be at least square root of n, but it turns out that we can find a position in which it is not very much larger than the square root of n. So for L ellipsoid, we have these probabilistic estimates, and we also have a large ball inside. The other ellipsoid, which is very useful, is the Jones ellipsoid. And I'll consider the outer Jones ellipsoid, the ellipsoid of minimal volume containing k. And if I assume that this ellipsoid is the standard Euclidean ball, the intersection of the boundary of k and the sphere contains many points. These points are called contact points. And the theorem of John shows that these points form a decomposition of the identity operator. In particular, this means that the structure of these contact points is pretty regular. And we want to get both situations. At the same time, we want to have a large ball inside, and we want to have a regular family of contact points. And it's possible to pass to the projection if K is a convex body, then we can project K on the subspace of dimension L, which is proportional to N, such that we'll have even a nicer situation. We not only have a regular family of contact points, we have a copy of the cross polytope inside. We have a copy of the unit basis inside, and also we have a pretty large Euclidean ball. And how large? It's proportional to the mean width of the body L of the polar divided by the square root of n. So it is exactly what we want to obtain from this lemma. And the main tool to prove this is a result of Vershinin, which shows that, in particular, the family of contact points contains a subset of cardinality proportional to n, which looks like an orthonormal basis. But moreover, we need a stronger statement, which he proved that if you apply some operator to it, then under some conditions on this operator, we still have a subset of images of contact points which look like an orthonormal basis. Now we have the approximation from the inside, and this is the convex hull of the cross polytope and the ball. We want to approximate the body from the outside, and we are allowed to project it again. So which projection we want to choose? Our aim is to retain the structure we got inside, and inside we have a cross polytope, which forces us to consider coordinate projections, because coordinate projections retain the cross polytope. And here we'll use random coordinate projections. Let me define what I mean by the random coordinate projection. We'll choose a delta which is of order n over k, k over n, sorry, to n over k inverse, and we take the independent identically distributed Bernoulli random variables, which takes values 0 and 1 with probability of 1 is delta, which will serve as selectors. So we have a random subset of indices I. This is a subset of indices where delta I's are 1. And we define a random coordinate projection, Pi. If I have a vector with coordinates x1, xn, then the coordinates of the projection will be delta 1, x1, etc., delta 1, xn, delta n, xn. So we erase all the coordinates for which the selector turned out to be 0. And, of course, with high probability, the rank of this coordinate projection is greater than k, if I chose delta this way. And if I take any concrete vector, then its norm in average will shrink with the shrinking coefficient square root of delta. And moreover, we can, if I consider, say, the vector with coordinates 1, 1, 1, 1, for any for almost any projection, it will be of order square root of delta. So we, if I consider the random vector, it will be the same as well. So random vector nicely shrinks. But what doesn't shrink is the basic vector. If I take a vector 1, 0, 0, 0, then its projection is either 0, which is good. But if it's not 0, it's 1. And if we consider all the basic vectors, namely the cross polytope, its projection will be always the cross polytope. So if I speak about a random projection of a general convex body inside a ball, I'll end up definitely with the cross polytope inside. So we will have a ball of radius, a Euclidean ball of radius square root of delta inside, and we have a cross polytope inside. And it turns out that it's more or less enough. The only thing to do, you have to dilate the cross polytope, and then you can cover a random projection of any convex body. Namely, we have the following proposition, that if K is any convex symmetric body, actually, if it's any set in the unit ball, then with probability close to 1, the projection of K is contained inside the convex hull of the cross polytope multiplied by the L of K polar and the square root of delta times the unit, the Euclidean ball. Actually, it's a little cheating. It's true for delta, which is small enough. For all delta, we have an additional term, which is square root of 1 plus log log n over log 1 plus delta to the square root. But if the delta is less than 1 over log n, this term disappears. And if I consider it up to a logarithmic factor, I will be able to ignore it. And moreover, for delta proportional to n, this radius of the ball is large, so the lemma is less interesting. Now let's compare it for a moment with what we have for random projection, not random coordinate projection, but any random projection. And here from the concentration of measure, if we have a random projection on the subspaces of dimension delta n, then this random projection is included in the sum of two Euclidean balls. Of course, it's a fancy way to say that the radius is a maximum of these two numbers, but I wrote it to emphasize the analogy with what we get here. So square root of delta is the same. And if I look at this term, if delta is small, then this is constant. And if I consider the ball inside the cross polytope, it will be of the radius 1 over the square root of the dimension. So we have the square root from there. Now, I can only outline the steps of the proof of this approximation theory, then the approximation from inside. And the first step, we consider the body K by the shifts of the ball of the radius square root of delta. And if I consider the centers of these balls, it's enough to prove this theorem only for the set T1, the set of centers. Because if T1, the random projection of T1 falls inside this set, then the random projection of the whole K will fall inside this set with another constant C. And now we passed from K to a finite number of points, and we can control the number of these points by and the next on which depends on our set T1 and delta, and we'll consider the maximal epsilon net in T1, this time in the metric L infinity. And this theorem for the set T2 instead of T1. T2 is this epsilon net. And it follows from the fact that the number of points in T1 is small, and if I consider the distance, the difference between any point of T1 and the closest point of T2, it will have a small L infinity norm, so we'll be able to handle it using random projection. And now we passed from our body to the finite set where we control the number of points and where we control the separation of the points in L infinity metric. We can do an easy symmetrization. Instead of the random projection delta I xi, we'll consider a symmetrized random variable. I take an independent copy of delta I, which delta j, which is delta j prime, and I take a difference of these two random variables, so it's a random variable with the expectation zero, and it's easy to show that it's enough to prove this theorem for the map Q, which is nu j times xj instead of the random projection P. Finally, this can be described as some random process, and this process will have proper of Bennett tails. I'll not enter into the details how they look like. It's a pretty nasty formula which behaves more or less like Poisson, but it depends simultaneously on two metrics, on two norms of the vector x, the L2 norm and the L infinity norm. And the major problem is to separate them. But it was already done for us by Talagran, who proved that the measurizing metric random process with Prokhorov-Bennett tails, and the estimate is in terms of two measurizing measures. Now I can only mention it. It's for the measurizing measure gamma 1 with the metric L infinity, and the measurizing measure gamma 2 with the metric L2. The later creature is well known, is actually L of T2 polar by another theorem of Talagran, so we can control it. And the main step of the proof of this is the first for only reductions, is to estimate the measurizing measure gamma 1 in the metric L infinity. And in using this measure gamma 2, in general it's impossible. We can have situations that, where gamma 2 is nicely bounded, the gamma 1 is essentially unbounded. But what helps us is that the set T2 we prepared is finite and it's nicely separated in L infinity metric. And this allows us, if we know the measurizing measure in L2 metric, to construct the measurizing measure in L infinity metric. Now we have both approximation from the inside and the outside, and we can conclude the proof of the theorem. And ignoring the logarithmic coefficients from the proposition 1, from the approximation from the outside, I can find a projection K1 proportional dimension which contains the cross polytope and the ball. This L of K polar over square root of N, and the similar construction works for the body D1. Then I use the approximation from the outside and pass to the farther projection K2 and D2. So both projections are squeezed between the convex hull of a cross polytope and the ball. And now to estimate the copy of K2 by the image of D2, and that means that we have to cover the cross polytope and the ball separately, and we have the cross polytope and the ball inside. This leads to several different cases where one estimate is optimal and another estimate is optimal. The first case is when both mean widths of K1 polar and D1 polar are small, and then coordinate projections is bounded by the K squared divided by N. That's exactly what we have for projections of Gluskin polytopes. Now, if we assume that one or both of mean widths are large, then again, analyzing the particular cases, we can conclude that the distance between random projections K2 and random coordinate projections K2 and D2 is bounded by the maximal of L of K1 polar times L of D1 polar and the square root of K. If this the first quantity is less than the second, we are done. We proved what we claimed. If this product is larger than the square root of K, this method gives nothing. It can be very large. So we have to dump our random coordinate projection, but fortunately we have other random object to work with. It's the random projection. Random means uniformly random, uniformly distributed over the Grassmannian. And if we consider the random projection, there are again two cases. If I consider random projection of the body K1, I retain the body K1 with the approximation on the inside, and I'll project this body. If the mean width of K1 is large, then by the form of Dvoretsky theorem proved by Milman, the random projection will be almost Euclidean. If this is small, then a random projection will be inside a Euclidean ball of smaller radius, and the radius is this shrinking factor, square root of K over N. So if the mean width is large, say of K1, then we are done, because the projection is a Euclidean ball. The distance from any body to the Euclidean ball is bounded by the square root of the dimension. If it's small, then I know from the approximation from the inside that I have a small, a large ball inside. I have a small ball from the other outside, so I can bound the geometric distance and the Banach-Mazur distance from the random projection K3 to the ball, and this time I have the mean width in the denominator. So if I do the same for the body D2 and multiply it, I'll have the product of I have the distance between the random projections K3 and D3 bounded by K divided by the product of the L of K1 polar and D1 polar, and now we compare it to the estimate for the random coordinate projection. Here we have the product in the numerator and have the product in the denominator. So one of them will be definitely less than or equal than square root of n, which completes the proof of the theorem. Now, if we want to for individual bodies, then we run into a problem, at least even on the dimension n, because we do not know the distance from between two given bodies, not speaking about the distance between two sections. There are some partial results which are possible, and coming back from to the question from which I began, there one can prove that that means that there is a pair of convex bodies for which the distance dk is equal up to logarithmic factor to this function every dimension k. Okay, my time is almost up. So.